This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. I want to welcome this week our newest friends of the Magic Word. Those are the ones who give us financial support, and I want to thank all of you listeners for coming back week to week and for listening. But in particular, I do want to recognize those people who go the extra effort and actually will support this podcast with their financial pledges. This week, I want to welcome Kevin Daniel and also Ken Wheeler Jr. Thank you guys for your support. It's always great to get a check in the mail, and that's what happened when I got a nice check from Kevin Daniel and showing his support for the podcast. And also, Ken Wheeler, thank you very much for your financial pledge through Patreon.com, so we have your ongoing support. So thank you very much, and for those who might be interested in knowing how that you can help support this podcast to keep us going, please go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and there you'll see a drop-down in the menu where you can, or a tab, something where on the website where you'll be able then to help support us as well. Thank you guys very much. And as I mentioned also, thank you for coming in from week to week and tuning in and hearing these great conversations with conjurers. I do want to reiterate again that these are conversations and not necessarily intended to be strictly interviews. I always think of interviews as being something where you are talking about what is your favorite color, you know, what's your favorite movie, or you know, just a little bit of background. And my thought is most of these people who are on the podcast from week to week are friends, people I've known for a long time, and we are just talking about things we have in common, places where we've worked, and you guys just kind of seem like you are a fly on the wall hearing a couple of friends talking. And the occasional time, I do have some guests who I don't know as well or may not have worked with, and so I try to encourage them to share some stories by just giving them some feedback of my own experiences, and then they might say, oh yeah, well I had this experience too, or whatever. And I mention that because I know some people may think of this as being an interview, and maybe I'm not doing a good job as an interviewer, and I want to point out I'm not trying to be an interviewer. I am just trying to have conversations with other friends and people who maybe are not close friends, but we become more well acquainted and better known to each other through the conversations and the common experiences that we share. And after the conversation, we do become much better friends, obviously, and you get to know these people then as well. I just wanted to point that out because I had someone who said recently I had not done a good job of interviewing someone, and my point was really I don't like to think of these as interviews, but again, rather as conversations. Well, enough on that. This week, we do have a conversation with another young person, actually, who is someone who is up and coming, and his name is Sean Jay. He has been on Masters of Illusion. He also was on the cover of MUM, which is Magic, Unity, and Might. That's the journal for the Society of American Magicians. He was featured, again, in a cover article early in 2020, and he is someone who is on the rise and I think has something of interest that you might enjoy hearing. And again, I believe that our future lies in the hands of our youth. And this young man, again, is someone I feel that our future is in good hands because he is putting it to good work and he's taking magic in a little bit different direction. And I like where he's going and perhaps you might want to follow him as well. Well, I'm not going to go into too much more detail about what we're going to discuss, but kind of let this unfold as we continue our conversation and not an interview this week. So please welcome my guest, Mr. Sean Jay, here on The Magic Word. Today I have with me a guest who is someone you may have seen on Masters of Illusion or perhaps some other show. He works around the United States. He is a fairly young man compared to me, young enough to be my son, actually. Maybe even grandson? No, you're not that young and I'm not that old. But certainly, with the years of experience that he has, you will benefit from the knowledge that he has gained in such a short amount of time through the conversation we're about to have over here. And so, please, let's welcome my friend, Mr. Sean Jay. Hey there, Sean. How are you today?
Hey, Scott. Yes, thank you for having me as a guest. Love what you do with your podcast.
Thanks very much. I have a great time with it. It is a lot of fun, certainly, and I'm glad that you could be a part of it here this week. I've been wanting to get you on for an episode for a while. I know that you were on The Masters of Illusion, but what was it that Gay Blackstone saw in you to say, you know, I think I want to have this guy on my show? I mean, what was that it factor? Do you feel like it? I mean, was it your marketing? Or your, I mean, what was that?
Wow, that's a great question. I don't know. You might want to ask her that.
Maybe I will.
Don't know what the specific thing that she said, okay, I want this guy for my show. I mean, I could make assumptions and guesses, but they're probably not as accurate as what she had to say. I mean, I don't know. I know they're always looking for something different.
Uh-huh.
So probably a large part of it had to do with the material that I was offering. And
yep.
Because I go out of my way above and beyond to try to be as different as I possibly can. And when she first had me on, I was doing this time act. And I mean, nobody has seen that on Masters of Illusion before in the way that I was doing it. So
mm-hmm.
That's probably a big chunk of that reason.
I know Masters of Illusion, for those in other countries who are listening to this who may not have seen Masters of Illusion, they are on YouTube. You can watch videos from a lot of magicians who have appeared on the show over the last 8 or 9 season or however long that it's been running, and probably will run and continue perpetuity. They have had a lot of success on the show by having people like you on there, and I like the variety they have where they have an illusionist and they'll have a close-up person, they'll have somebody walking out in the audience, they'll have a stand-up person. Sometimes they have, again, illusionists who are going to be with dancers and others who will just be in one or might be more of a parlor type of a thing. And so when you'd come to them and you had submitted your tape, I guess, you had a video, I guess, you'd sent, hey, look, I'm interested in being on, or what was the process? How'd you end up getting on there?
I wish it was that simple.
Okay.
Wish I could film something in one take and just send it to them and they go, wow, that was amazing. Let's walk on stage and let's
do
it.
Sure.
I wish it was that easy. And that's a big misconception with television. Just from my experience, my understanding, they're very specific with what they want. They're usually very specific with what they don't want. And if you happen to fall in alignment and the timing is right, then you've got it. So for me, it was actually a longer relationship that has been developed over time. Not super close, like a personal friend thing, but she's kind of, I guess, known about me for years because I was an intern at Magic Live, the Magic Live convention
mm-hmm.
out of Las Vegas. And I believe her, along with Harriet Jacobson and Robbie Wilmarth at the time, they had a booth, BJW Magical Jewelry. And, you know, she would come in and out, and I just happened to cross paths, you know, because I was working the convention, and I struck up a conversation. But this was back in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
So this was, you know, like 10 plus years ago that
right.
that just kind of known about me in the back of her head. But I didn't get on the show instantaneously. It literally took like that whole 8 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Before it finally became to fruition.
But that wasn't something you were petitioning, and you didn't have that long-term goal. You just happened to be crossing paths with each other and thinking, oh, there's an opportunity. I might like to be on the show sometime, I guess.
Yeah. Well, in the beginning, when I was younger, I know I'm young, but when I was younger, I was in my mid to late teens, I guess, at that time. And I found out, oh, okay, so that's how it works. I submit some stuff to her, and so she said, send me a link. And what I sent her the first time was just pitiful, and it wasn't right format for the show. I didn't know
yeah.
what they were looking for, how to submit, what kind of material. It just was a mess. So of course I didn't hear anything back, and you know, we happened to cross paths again. I don't know how randomly at another convention, send me your stuff. I sent it again the following year or two, and it was still a bunch of crap that I sent.
Yeah.
To be honest, it just wasn't the right format. It just wasn't the right thing. And then finally, what the thing that really I do have to say, I do give a lot of credit to one of my good friends and teachers, mentor, Jeff McBride. He has been helping me, man, since I was like 13. I've been going to master classes and online consults. I come to him with ideas and I say, this is what I want to do. Can you help me make it better? And he always does. And then one year I said, I want to have a competition act for magic competitions. And this was 2018. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's kind of actually the seed of the idea started even earlier than that. It started in like 2011, but it was just a really rough concept. I just kept tinkering, but then I really got serious 2018. And so he helped me. And I got this thing, this wonderfully crafted thing, this time act, this manipulation of time. And I was just went full speed ahead with that. And I composed my own music for that. I came up with an outfit. I had a local woodworker build a custom table. I had some custom props built by Mike Michaels, who later became a friend and now making stuff for him. It's kind of funny how that goes full circle.
Yeah.
Awesome, amazing magician, builder, and just really good guy. So I combined all these things over years. The different pieces started to just happen, and then I took them all. And I finally made sense of them, 2018, 2019. 2018, I won first place Daytona Magic's adult stage competition. And that was my like one hit wonder for the convention circuit for a while. Because then shortly after that, that kind of helped. I pitched it to them again. And I said, hey, I just won this contest. Here's a video of the act. And then another friend of mine, Glenn Foster, who is a magician, but he also used to work at SeaWorld. He's an animal lover. My buddy Glenn, he had a show that was held in a theater, and that's what I was missing. I was missing footage of my act in a theater, and that's kind of what they wanted to see. They didn't want to see a street show. They didn't want to see me in a restaurant. Nobody cares. They just said, what can we see that will convert best to our show? We want to see the closest match,
right?
Because they have a stage that's kind of similar to a theater stage with an audience. So I guess that did it. I gave them what they wanted. I gave them something different, and I gave it to them in the right format. And even at that, the first time I submitted the video, I was told to make a ton of changes. I was making
by who told you to make the changes?
The producers of Masters
of
Illusion.
The show. Okay.
Yeah, I was told, see, because my competition act, your standard competition act, I don't know, it was around 7 minutes.
Right, yeah.
And that was the act. And then they said, oh, no, way too long.
Yeah, cut it down. Like 3 minutes or 90 seconds or something.
three minutes, 3.5 minutes. And so I said, oh, shoot, what am I going to do here? I have this whole thing, muscle memory, mm-hmm. 7 minutes. How am I going to squish this into three and a half minutes?
Right.
So I think a lot of decisions, a lot of choices, some that I didn't want to do, some that made me feel very uncomfortable. And it was really a pain in the butt, I actually have to say. But that was just me being spoiled, not knowing what the process was, not knowing what the format was. And man, did I that beat me into submission. Once I was done, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, it's exactly 3 minutes, 30 seconds to the team. And I had to redo all my music because I made custom music. I had to go in music editing programs, redo the whole thing. There were different sound effects. I had to replace everything.
Right.
It was a lot of work. And then finally they said, all right. We'll try you out. And that was the only thing that I did the first. Actually, I take that back. I did the time act, and then I did, I think, one close-up piece. Mm-hmm. And that was it. And then from then on, I guess I proved myself. I guess you can say that I listened to instructions, I delivered the goods, mm-hmm. and I gave something different.
I think you probably grew from that a lot also, from the standpoint of learning how to refine your act, and I would assume.
Absolutely, man. That was like, I never had to do something like that. See, because I had a TV appearance prior to all this Masters of Illusion stuff. I was on MasterChef season 4 with on Fox.
Okay.
As a contestant.
Cooking?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I was and then I did some magic.
Okay.
And that, they just kind of gave me free rein pretty much with, they just said, you know, if you want to do some magic with food somehow, great.
Just throw that in. Yeah.
Yeah, just throw it in. There was nothing like, this is our time frame. This is what you can or can't wear. This is, it was really, there was a lot of little notches that I had to, check marks that I had to fit for the show. And also, I think sometimes, because I'm not, prior to that point, nobody really in the magic community knew who I was outside of my close friends or mentors. I'm sure there was somebody there in the boardroom meeting saying, okay, if this kid really wants it, we're going to put him through the ringer here. Let's see if he can actually pull this off. So I think that may have been part of it. But ever since I pulled that off, so far, so good. So far, they've been kind enough to keep inviting me back. They like the material that I bring. Now they know how I think, and they know that I know what to for.
Well, people like to work with friends and someone they know is a known quantity, if you will, and something that has brought them success from before. A couple of questions I've got about that. One has to do with, you talk about Jeff McBride. Was he your director, if you will? Because I think everyone to be successful needs to have an outside objective party looking at an act and saying you need to tweak this and do this or that. So was he your director and your outside consultant, or were there others who kind of gave you input?
There have been others that have given me input. However, I do have to say Jeff was a big majority of the input. Mm-hmm. And he always has been. I can't say enough good things about him. He's really helped me catapult my career and motivate me to get my get myself off my butt. I'm trying to stay family friendly here. And, just do it, because prior to that, I was just tinkering with an idea. And I'll just put this out there. There's so many people, there's so many magicians, there's so many artists. And I know it's really hard. It's hard for me. It's not easy for me. I have to push myself all the time. And we think about these ideas, and then we only want to release them when they're perfect, when they're absolutely perfect.
Sure.
When we have everything right. But
it never will be if you're looking for perfection.
Yeah, well, I am naturally a perfectionist, I would say, and I believe a lot of artists are.
But when you get it to a working point where you think it's perfect, my point is it's not, because after you're finished, you're going to say, look, I can have done this, or I should have done that. I'm going to do something else to make it perfect. So perfect is a goal. I think perfection is a goal. We think we might have something down, so it is perfect right now. But again, it's not, and so we're continuing to work towards that ultimate goal. Would you disagree with that? You kind of.
I wouldn't even call it a goal. I would perfection a fantasy.
Okay, because we'll never achieve it.
Well, I mean, think about it though. Think about all the greatest acts in magic. At some point in their career, even at the peak of their career, they can tell stories about shows that they did where, despite their hardest efforts, they had a big flop, a big mishap, because they're all human. And nobody can ever be 100% perfect all the time. Nor do I think there's a thing that exists as 100% perfect art, because art is all subjective to the viewer, to the listener. And yeah, I mean, I've heard plenty of stories about legendary pros making silly, dumb mistakes just because they're human. Mm-hmm. So, on the other hand, you said perfection is a goal. A lot of people make it their goal. A lot of people make perfection their goal. I think it's nothing wrong with striving to get as perfect or as best of a product that you can put out there. I completely agree with that.
Right.
On the same token, I don't think anybody can ever expect total perfection, because I used to be like that when I was younger. And man, I would get myself so upset. I would just be like, you know, I'd be doing birthday parties and wasn't getting the reaction that I wanted, or the kids would say something, or they would, you know, knock over my stuff. And, you know, I had been practicing all day, and I thought this thing was perfect, right? Mm-hmm. And just, there's stuff that you don't expect. Things crop up. you can't always you can prepare as much as possible, but there are always things that are just random things that'll pop up and surprise you. So
well, it's Murphy's Law. That's true.
I think it's almost like climbing the greased pole of perfection, because you're never going to get you're never going to get to perfection.
It's Sisyphus.
Close.
Sisyphus pushing the rock up the hill. Right. Well, along that line, I have another question about developing that act, and you have a time act. And so did you, when you said, okay, I'm going to start working on a contest act, which I think is admirable, and I think that's also something that is a goal that people should, particularly young people, should look at attending magic conventions and entering contests so they have the opportunity to say, I've got a deadline, I've got to meet this, because that's a thing you learn in life. You've got deadlines, and that if you learn that early by saying, okay, well, I'm going to be performing and competing in this contest on this date, and so I need to do this, this, and this, and so you start having start achieving these things. So you had an idea then to begin with, okay, I want to do that, and then you came about with the idea on the time act. My question is, how were you influenced, or what influenced you, if anything, or how did the idea of the time act come up? Was it something that, in other words, you were always interested, I don't know, in Doctor Who or something, or you just liked something about time or time travel? What was it about that
great question. Great question. Yes, Scott. So the reason why I chose that theme is, for one, I was interested in science when I was little, like a lot of boys are. And number two, well, there's many reasons. The second reason is because when I was younger, for the longest of times, I had this problem with being late everywhere that I went. I was this mega procrastinator, always late all the time, and I never understood the concept of time. Never. And my mother and my father would try to beat it into my head, and my mother would always say to me, she would say, Sean, you can't be late to these things, because that's gonna, you know, you only get one shot for that first impression. You just can't be late. You can't leave people waiting. It's disrespectful, et cetera, et cetera. We all know that. Although it was easy to it's easy concepts to say, for some reason, I don't know why, I just didn't want to grasp that. Interestingly enough, maybe I'm not going to blame him, though, but maybe I had some influence. My dad always had a problem. He was always late for everything, and he would always make excuses for it. And my mom and dad would have discussions, heated discussions, let's just say, about that all the time. Why are you always late? Why
about your dad being late, not you, but your dad being late?
Yeah. People don't like it when you're late. You're disrespecting their time. Yada yada yada. So maybe that played into it with me, but eventually I got it through my head to start showing up and start showing up on time, as I was for this interview. And I mean, because if you have to be it was Jeff actually that told me, he said, in order to be the master of space and time, you must first get to the space on time. So
he and I also agree that if you are arriving on time, you're late. If you get there early, you're on time.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, if the show starts at 7, you can't show up at 7.
That's right.
It's not going to end well. Yeah, of course you show up well ahead of time, so you can be standing on that stage ready to go right when the clock hits 7. So that was a part of it. And then finally, I believe it was, who was it? Richard Ross. Yes, Richard Ross did a pocket watch act that I happen to see on YouTube, because I'm from the YouTube generation. I did not read about his act in a book, but later found out that there was somebody that predated him. I think Jeff told me about this, Gus Fowler, who you can find in the red booklet called Programs of Famous Magicians.
Okay.
Programmes. It's this cheap little, just silly, not silly. It's not a exciting looking pamphlet. It's just white typewriter text with black and white illustrations from probably Nelson Hahn, if that's how you say his name.
Hahn. H-A-H-N. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, that guy. Mm-hmm. And it would give programs of famous magicians, and Gus Fowler was in there. And I don't know why.
But he had a pocket watch act. you said also. Okay. So you're kind of impressed by him and Richard Ross. Yeah.
Yes. That's the best way I can describe it.
And okay. So in other words, you had studied some of the past masters and influenced by what they had done, trying to resurrect their act, a classic act, but put a modern twist on it. But don't let me put words in your mouth.
Yeah, it was a little bit of that. And it was also that I, like I said, from a scientific point of view, I was always intrigued by the concept of time, and that time is an illusion in a way, that time is an illusion created almost by humans, in the sense that the word time, it's a concept, and we're measuring it here on Earth by our watches and the placement of the sun. But if you go in outer space, if you go way, way, way out in outer space, past the sun into the darkness, you know, I just watched a documentary on space travel, and it said that astronauts frequently, the bodily clock, their circadian rhythm gets mm-hmm. so screwed up because they have no concept of where the sun is. They have no concept of day or night. And so even if they're looking at their watch, and plus time passes at a different rate when you're in outer space. So all that, Einstein's theory of relativity, when I was in high school, I really enjoyed studying physics, but I didn't do well in it.
Okay.
Conveniently enough, I actually did just okay, but I really found it fascinating. So all that put together over the years just made me go there. And it was Mike Michaels too. I saw one of his tables with the gears, the steampunk tables, and then right. that just clicked. I was like, oh, let's put it all together. That's kind of the story behind that.
I guess, do you have an interest in time travel movies, or do you like that kind of a thing then too, or that
really yeah.
not influential yeah. or was?
I do, yeah. I don't actually watch a lot of like standard Hollywood movies. I've never been like a big movie guy, but the movies that I have seen involving that have always been like the Benjamin Button.
Yep, going backwards in time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That, you know, aging backwards. There was one, the Time Traveler. I think we talked about that. It was a modern adaptation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Where the inventor meets this girl who becomes his love interest, and then all of a sudden she, you know, they're in a park together, and they a mugger comes by and he wants to steal her purse or something, and then the inventor, the clockmaker, he's trying to defend her, and somehow in the process the thief ends up, you know, killing his girlfriend. And so, oh man, if I could go back in time and let's do this again the right way, because now I know where the thief is, now I know what's going to happen. Change the order of the sequence. Right. And that's a recurring theme. And then he makes a time machine, of course. Right. Yeah, I love those things.
Do you have things in mind for your act to evolve into something else? Or are you fine-tuning what you've got already to make sure each of the pieces are better? Or
I'm your classic artist in the sense that I get bored really easily with my work. Mm-hmm. So I am changing things all the time. In fact, the thing that I've really been focusing on now is what you see on the cover of the magazine that you have, is with the light bulb. And I like that because it uses – that has nothing to do with time travel, but it has something – there it is.
Yeah.
A younger, thinner, really too thin.
Well, that was from February of 2020 on the MUM magazine. Mm-hmm. But that was a younger promo photo and shorter hair and everything.
Well, I don't – was taken in 2020. That was when I was going through my vegan phase, and I lost a ton of weight for no reason. Anyway,
you're back to being a meat eater, huh?
I'm trying to create a happy medium here. Yes.
Okay.
So, where the heck was I? Oh, as far as what I'm doing now,
developing and working and on your back. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm always learning new skills, and actually, the way it evolved is really kind of cool, because Mike Michaels, we were talking about these props, and I had this pocket watch that I use in the act that we were talking about that lights up. And he showed me a basic way to get that happening. And he was kind enough to basically allow me to apprentice for a very short period of time in his shop. And he said, this is the end goal. I'm going to show you how to start it, and I want you to finish it. And so through that process, I learned how to do this basic electrical stuff. And then years later, talking about evolving, I was telling him, you know, this is okay, but what if I'm doing this in a full lit room? It's just not bright enough. And he said, well, make it brighter. And okay. That's all he said. And so I asked an electrician friend of mine, how the heck can we do this? And he always kept dodging the question, which was so silly because I knew he know the answer. Knew the answer. He just didn't want to answer my question. I don't know, because he was lazy or he was too busy or what. So I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to figure it out myself. I'm going to figure this out. And I talked to some other people who gave me some ideas, and I ended up wiring and creating a much, much like better version of this watch that was 10 times brighter. And that was a royal pain in the butt, but I learned a heck of a lot in the process. So where I'm going with this further down the line, doing all of that set my mind up for the next set of material I was working on, which was the light bulb thing, mm-hmm. because I used everything that I learned prior on that and then some, and using more modern day electronics and using a lot of makerspace skills that mm-hmm. I was just learning off of YouTube and just learning on my forums and things. Just see, I've always been like, see, I'm an only child. I was homeschooled when I was very little. I've always been like do-it-yourself kind of guy. If you can't, if nobody else is going to do it for you, then figure it out yourself. So that's pretty much the story of my life. I've just been like figuring it out as I go along, and I'll have an end goal in my mind and I'll say, how can I get there? And I try to get help from others. I do my very best. And if I'm really busy, I'll try to hire somebody to just get me from point A to point B. But if all else fails, I just say, okay, I got to do this. How the heck am I going to do this? Step by step, very, very slowly. And so I did.
I know you've been very involved with 3D printing, and that's been something you've probably been teaching yourself then also.
Yes.
And getting better and better at that. And there are different processes going through, and you're developing your own things. And I know we can just do a whole episode on a podcast just about 3D printing. And there are more and more magicians who are getting more involved in that and buying their own printers like Levent and others. But
absolutely.
Let me just leave it at that and I'd let you jump in. Let me have your thoughts on that.
Yeah. I, from what I understand, I think Levent is like the OG guy when it comes to that, because I've been seeing posts of him doing that stuff for quite some time now. I mean, he probably got them when they were really expensive for like really poorly designed ones and just coming out to consumers.
I think so. He gave a talk at the Magic Live a few years ago when you were probably interning back then. Do you remember that? Do you remember his lecture or his TED talk on that?
If I was interning, I may have missed it because they had us running around doing so many different things where we couldn't just sit in one place for too long.
I know you. Carissa was working. Was she working with you backstage also? She was an intern, I remember, at Magic Live for a few years. Carissa Hendricks.
She must not have been the year that I was there. She either before or after. Like I said, I was 2009, I think I started, 08 or 09.
She was much later, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, she was much later. But, Levent, there's Louis Fox is doing stuff for himself. I just
What I think is kind of a cool idea is how people, like he was talking in this chat about how he was making his own props. And Levent was making props, 3D props. So
absolutely.
That way that he could design them exactly the way he wanted it and for absolutely. The exact purpose that you want it to hang on your case or wherever it's going to be.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. And it's almost like the magician's dream to be able to do that, because lots of times we'll see things in old books that aren't made anymore, but the old books would always stress, like let's see, Hoffman's Modern Magic back there and Tarbell and all that, they would say, or let's just go with the books of wonder, Tommy Wonder's stuff. I mean that was that guy, he was just, this is what I want, I'm going to go, you know, Tommy Wonder probably chopped down his own tree with his axe, skinned the bark off the wood, processed the wood himself. I mean, Tommy Wonder did the whole thing. Yeah. There was no shortcuts with him. But now it's like we can see this stuff in the old books and we can recreate it sort of easier. I mean, there's a lot of, like when I custom design stuff, because that's my other side of Sean Jay is when I'm not performing or speaking, I'm doing custom designs for people, magicians and inventors and product developers. The design part takes a while, but it's a different type of work than the old fashioned taking a saw and slicing the wood and taking the metal and polishing the metal. I mean, probably I'd say the same amount of time is involved with the design process, because the design on the computer, the CAD design, takes hours and hours and hours and hours. And wow. To be honest, the actual act of 3D printing is probably the easiest part. So if you get designs already made, then your life is really easy. You know, some people can just get designs that are already made offline, and that's fine. But if you truly want something that does exactly what you want it to do, that's in the exact measurements, the exact specs, like you said, to hang off the back of your table or to pivot out a coin in a special way, it's going to take hours and hours and hours of R&D and design. And that's just what it takes. Like I learned that through working with Paul Harris. He has some of the weirdest projects because his mind is very different and always thinking in the offbeat. He's had me do very strange and bizarre things that I never thought I could even do, but I would just say okay anyways, and I learned a lot in the process. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of hard work.
Yeah, I would think that it would be, and the design would be one of the most difficult things, particularly if you didn't have that kind of a background. I don't know that anybody does. It's new ground that everybody is laying every day on that.
Relatively new. I mean, I would say that the person that would be the most well-equipped per se would probably be like a person who's majoring in engineering in college, maybe, or industrial design or architecture. Maybe they'd have a better initial grasp on it because, I mean, they went to school for that. But, the cool thing about it in today's society is you technically don't have to have an engineering degree to do some of this stuff, at least to get done what we need to get done for our shows or so I consider it a blessing to have discovered the art of design. Well, I mean, I've always actually been a designer in the sense that I was always drawing things. Mm-hmm. I would always just draw with paper and pencil. So before I even got into magic, when I was very little, I was obsessed with drawing. I would carry around sketchbooks. And I wasn't drawing props or anything, but I was heavy into comics. And what I would do is I would get all the old Spider-Man and Superman comics, all the old Marvel comics, and I would look at different superhero poses, and I would try to draw that exact same thing to the T, detail, in pencil. Mm-hmm. And I did after a while. I got really good at that. And so that carried over just to my design work, especially when I'm brainstorming new ideas. I have a book and I sketch my things out and then I make them in 3D and then it goes.
Well, having that perfectionist OCD brain kind of a thing where you want to have it perfect, I can understand that. I have a lot of attention to detail as well when I'm doing my graphics and for my podcast, blog, and other kinds of things. I know what you're talking about. It does take quite a bit of time. Now, I know, again, you'd work with Mike Michaels, as you mentioned earlier, on various projects also, and you've designed some things then for him as well?
Yes, yes. So.
And he also helped you, I guess he designed a watch that you use for your timepiece?
Correct. It was literally my timepiece. The show is the timepiece, and then the timepiece was in the timepiece.
Yeah.
So, yes, I credit him largely for helping me at least get a start with something looking good enough and professional enough to showcase on stage in a professional setting. Because the reason why is because the prototypes that I made were just brutal. They just looked absolutely awful. And I was using them in a couple of local live shows, and then I just every time I would look at these things, I'd say this just does not look right. First of all, it doesn't perform properly. It doesn't do what I wanted it to do. And I just got frustrated. And I said, what I said was the lie that I told myself is I'm not a builder. I'm not a creative person. I can't do this. I'll just have somebody else do it. And I've learned that if you want something bad enough, you'll somehow figure out a way to
get
whatever it is. And so that's kind of how it happened. He got the ball rolling, and then I realized these things are not going to last forever, so I better figure out how to make the next generation. Mm-hmm. And that's when I got hot on heels to 3D design and 3D printing. And I spent, because I was just learning at the time, I spent, oh my goodness, I spent 6 months, I believe, on the replication / upgrade version of the pocket watch where I ended up putting the new lighting system. I spent 6 months on that design.
Wow.
Now what I know now, I probably could have done it in maybe like less than a month, like 3 weeks.
Well,
but live and learn.
But you have gone through that process and you are a much better person and have more knowledge about how to cut those corners and things. Well, let's say cut corners. I mean, you're still going to have ultimately the best product, but you know what to do and what not to do, you know. And I think that's a process that everybody has to go through pretty much in life, regardless of whatever that you're trying to achieve.
It's a recurring theme in life. Yes, it is. It's not even if you want to make anything. It's just in life in general, mm-hmm. we have an experience where we're learning something new. And when we learn it the first time, we're always slow and make tons of mistakes. But then each time we do it, we get better and better, and our brain remembers, and we get faster and faster. And we find more, if not shortcuts, but efficient ways of doing things. I think that's the best.
I remember also another chat or talk that Mario the Maker was talking about using Arduinos, I think it is. Do you ever use?
Yeah.
Could you talk about that just a little bit? Because I think those are fascinating. And explain what they are. It's a little motherboard, basically, this kind of on-off switch, and you can make things happen that magicians are using.
Yeah, that's the general summary of it.
Okay.
Would you like me to elaborate?
Well, just a little bit. I mean, and do you use this much in your show, or are you kind of learning more about them now, or have you been using them for a long time?
Okay. Yeah, I can briefly go into that. So, yes, Mario did inspire me to tinker with Arduino, and I did. And I actually do have something in my current show that uses it. And so to just give a little more detail, yes, it is basically a motherboard. It's actually a little mini, super, super, super basic computer mm-hmm. That just processes binary data, which is mm-hmm. ones and zeros.
Ones and zeros, right.
Ones and zeros. It's really super basic. No 3D graphics or anything. It's just it uses computer language that's similar to C++. Back in the old days, people were coding by hand. So people code things. You can find already existing code, and then you put this on the Arduino, and then you hook things into it. Yes, and that it reads the code, and it translates the code through binary, and it causes whatever you've hooked into it to do things, whether it be servos. Mario's heavy on servos. Really anything that you could plug into it. So right. That's a little more on the Arduino.
Yeah, so things will go on and off at certain times because you can program that. So you know exactly if something's supposed to happen in your act at certain times, and you can program that easily enough. And you can do a little search, I think, on Google to find Arduinos, and you can buy them for like $30 or something. They're fairly inexpensive.
Yeah, the actual board itself can be found dirt cheap. You can get the original or you can get knockoff boards. I've heard the knockoff ones are pretty close,
good.
I'm not. On a magic podcast, I'm not going to promote purchasing knockoffs.
Thank you.
Always get the original.
Yes.
Lysander's listening. Okay.
That's right.
So is Ray Lum. He's going to beat me over the head with his baseball bat that he pulls out of a paper bag. So, get the original. Programming the Arduino, I don't think is easy at all. I think it's like being born into the world and being expected to speak Japanese. It's like you're thrown into this thing. Well, only now if you used to be a coder, there's some people that used to be, you know, programmers and developers mm-hmm. as just like a regular job, then they have an easier job at it. But if you've never done any of that before, I find it very difficult. Mm-hmm. And I think Mario said as well, I mean, the monkey that you see in his show and the other things, some of those things have taken him 10 years of just tweaking Arduino code and just playing around. He's the same way. I don't think he was a professional coder at another job. He just said, this is the end result I want to have, and I'm going to figure out a way to get to it. And he's been so persistent, mm-hmm. and sure, he did it. He's rocking it out.
He figured it out.
Oh, yeah.
I want to go in a completely different direction here, and it has to do with marketing. As the entertainment director of the Magic Island in Houston, which never came to pass, and I don't know when and if it ever will, but I had received other kinds of promotional material, but you had sent something that was unique from what I had received from anybody else, and I just wanted to share that. I thought that was a great idea of sending a postcard to begin with saying, expect to receive something else soon, and you know, then it's like, hey, I'm going to get another package, and then I got your promo package with the pictures and everything else that I needed in that. The point is, with being beginning, you had were homeschooled, you said, and then you later went to public school and all that. How did you come about or learn your marketing expertise, or from other people or from books or
both? Okay. Mostly people, mostly tidbits from friends and mentors over the years, which I learned very slowly at a sluggish, painfully slow pace. But I learned it, whereas some people never learn or never care.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for those people because, as you know, and as our listeners that are savvy to this know, marketing, there's the show and then there's the business. You can't have show business without the business. And most performers are artists and they hate the business side.
Right.
And I do have to say it's not my favorite thing. I would rather be practicing the latest pass or whatever move with whatever. But the bottom line is, if people don't know about you and your show, nobody cares. I mean, people don't really care enough to begin with in general. So in order to make them care, first you have to have a really, really fantastic product. And then you have to let people know about it somehow, whether it be passive marketing where people just see a viral video, or direct by sending people stuff in the mail. I will say Tobias Beckwith, which is Jeff's manager, I did take a course of his. Multiple years ago, and I was one of the few students that actually did the work.
Okay.
He told me, at least, he said, yeah, I had X amount of people sign up. You're one of the few that actually did the homework and turned the stuff in. And I said, I don't know what the point of people taking the course would be if they actually didn't do that. But anyway, Tobias, Jeff, but I'll go way back to when I first started Magic. There was a gentleman named Michael Creech, who I will credit. I would say, generally in the magic community, probably doesn't know who Michael is because he was not a magician's magician. He was just a businessman. He was a really good businessman that liked magic. And the business and the magic always bled together. And he was just a great, and still is, hustler. And by hustler, I don't mean, you know, BS artist. He was just, he was very brutally honest, as I am when I do business. But he knew what needed to get done. He knew how to please clients. He knew how to do business properly. And so I would ride with him to gigs when I was like 12 years old, and have these deep marketing business conversations in the car when I was 12,
right.
Which wasn't a big deal for me because like I was homeschooled and I was, you know, my brain was always thinking out.
It's hard to imagine because usually a 12-year-old boy would be wanting to play soccer or baseball or hockey or getting out inside and camping and running around or something instead of, or maybe playing, well, certainly not at that age of running after girls, but maybe learning magic or doing something cool rather than talking about such a deep subject about marketing.
Well, the girl thing, that was something that never existed with me. People ask me all the time, it's like, oh, you could use your magic to get girls. I said, well, I use my powers for good, and then interpret that the way you like. And then people would always laugh and say, oh, yeah, he must have 8 to 10 girls lining up. No, I'll be honest. I never had that. I never was into that just because I was always so career-minded, and I knew that it took a lot of work to actually get the career going. And I was busy working on that, and it was kind of hard to take time away from that because women and relationships or men or whatever – to have a successful relationship with anybody, it takes time and energy and money.
Right.
And at the age of 12, I had lots of time, very little money, very big desire to learn how to be a great magician. That was, you know, my goal in the back of the head. So Michael Creech, we had these conversations all the time, and he would always say, Sean, you want to be easy to work with, You want to make it simple for your clients. Make it as simple as possible. Don't complicate their life. And if you're easy to work with and you can make it simple for them, I mean, there's a lot more said, but they'll hire you year after year after year, because nobody likes complications. These people that event planners, show producers, their lives are complicated enough as it is. They've got mm-hmm. the whole show to think about. So sure. when you come in, they just want to say, here you are, here's what you do, done, move on, you know? So that's just a touch on.
Well, that's more and more today, I think, as well. When people want to have plug and play, you want things to be as easy as possible. And certainly there are some acts out there, and not just magicians, so just acts in general, who are yes. professional gig performers, are more complicated and more difficult to work with. And
usually they're complicated people too.
Well, that's probably the root of the issue. You're exactly right. But you need to, in that case, assess your life and where you want to go, and kind of look at what's happening or not happening and the reasons why it is happening. Am I doing something? What am I doing right? You know, sometimes things are flowing well and you're thinking, okay, well, I don't need to check. And then all of a sudden you hit a roadblock or something. Well, it's because things have been going well. You need to know, continue to do those. You might slip or something. I just think it's important to reevaluate every once in a while, not only what are we doing wrong, but what are we doing right so we can do more of those right things.
Oh, totally, totally. And a lot of people forget that. A lot of people, they just go, I didn't do this right. I didn't do that right, this and that. And then they become tough on themselves and they're missing the whole
sure.
the big concept, which is customer satisfaction.
Right.
So what am I doing right? What have I done to satisfy the customer? How can I amplify that? Mm-hmm. Totally.
It's not about me. It's about you, and try to keep yes. the focus on you. And that's what I've done. Like on my website, is try to look at every word I put on there and try to eliminate all the possessive pronouns. So I don't have mm-hmm. I, me, or we. It's always about you and how you can experience this, or you will not have to worry about this or whatever. So
taking away the pain points, taking away the worry, that's what clients want. Make their life easy and take away their pain. I mean, ultimately, when you buy any product, you're buying the product to solve a problem or take away your pain. You go to the doctor, they give you whatever to take away
sure.
your pain.
That's why you're there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, along that line, is that one of the things you touched on a moment ago about speaking to corporate audiences? What is your pitch? What is it that your thing that you talk about to them? Is it about marketing or something entirely different?
So the topic.
Yes.
The topic. In my case is the, let's see, well, I had one of the first talks I did was called The 5 Points of Success. And that was interesting because I one of the times I delivered that talk was for an oil company, surprisingly. And that's a weird story how that just check this out. I'll just summarize it in less than a sentence. I was working a restaurant.
Time. Go ahead. Lay it out.
Okay. All right. I'm sitting on the chair. I'm leaning back. You're taking notes.
Yeah.
We're all here in good company. I was working a restaurant. So that's the cool thing that I'll just toss out there to fellow performers or whoever's listening. Sometimes the gig or the job or the whatever that you're doing as a profession that you think is the least impactful or just, you know, you're not making as much money as you would like to because for whatever reason, you know, it can always lead to something much bigger and much better. And as long as you use it as a stepping stone and you realize that it can be a stepping stone, some people, they just get locked in a pattern and they never grow because they never think about it as a stepping stone. So in my case, I was working a restaurant, a local restaurant, and I was not expecting this one at all, just going table to table as usual.
Yeah.
The late great Eugene Berger has actually plenty of these stories about how, you know, he was working highfalutin places in Chicago, and perhaps there were times, I don't think the actual establishment was not paying him a whole lot of money, and there were, I think, some places, correct me if I'm wrong, that he may have worked totally free of charge.
For tips.
Yeah, or just for tips. And I remember him telling these stories that he said, I did that because of the clients that I was exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to say the E-X-P-O-S-U-R-E word, because we hear that all too often. You know, people don't like to work for exposure, but
right.
Eugene,
you can die from exposure, overexposure.
You're given the chance to do continuous recurring live demos of your product and service over and over and over again.
Right.
And in his case, he was lucky because he had, you know, all like super wealthy, well-off people. And in the pump room, I think it was, that was one of the, and Biggs was the other place.
Mm-hmm.
If I did my homework right, I think. And he said, you know, he would go in there and, oh, and he would also say that he would never hustle for tips. Because money was never the objective. It was always the private gig after he left and after they took his card, because they didn't feel uncomfortable, like they had to push him money because he didn't need the money, because he was doing all the high-end private parties, and that's how he got them. So in my case, kind of similar. The restaurant I was working, it wasn't only upper crust society. It was all types of people, but I had a good variety of people there. And sure enough, one of the tables, he didn't even look like a guy that would be in the industry. He wasn't even dressed like he'd be in that industry. But he said, "Hey, Sean," and he was, you know, a real Southern guy. "Hey, Sean, I really like what you do, and I'd like you to, you know, we're having an annual conference, and we'd like you to do something at our conference. What can you do for us?" And so I was working on this speech at the time.
Yeah.
And I pitched it to him right there. And it felt so weird because I was like in there doing close-up magic and then trying to pitch him a corporate speaking gig. I don't know how the heck I did it, but apparently he liked what I said and what I did. And I was in a hotel in another state and
yeah.
giving my talk for all these oil executives. And that shocked me. So there's that.
And it went well, I assume?
It did. It went really well. And he said – you know, he was like, "Sean, you had a lot to say, and we normally don't let speakers go on this long, I was really surprised. Nobody really left outside of to use the bathroom, and nobody was on their phones." And so I was like, "That's all I need to hear, man. That's great." So,
yeah. Did you do magic in conjunction with that, or was it just speaking only?
I did.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Magic and speaking, and each point had something to illustrate. Oh man, I wrote out the whole script and refined it. I had another talk that I created involving the importance of following your passion, and I have very specific stories from my life, my short time here on this earth, just all relating back to passion and just things that we're talking about here. Ever since I was 12. I mean, even before I was 12 years old, decided to get into magic, I was very passionate about whatever I was doing, you know, like with the drawing when I was much, much younger, mm-hmm. with hand percussion. Before drawing, I was into drumming and hand percussion.
Okay.
And I played not a drum set, but what you would consider rhythmic world music.
I guess I can see why you can get along well with Jeff McBride.
That is exactly a good man. So that was cool. There's a funny story there. So when I was 12, I was going to turn 13. My mother, who has always been extremely supportive of my work and my career, I ultimately, out of all these people and mentors, I got to give her the most credit, because when I told her I wanted to be a professional magician when I was 12 years old, the first thing she said to me was, "Great, that's so cool. How can I help?" And I said, "Really?" She
Great
said,
"Yeah."
Great
to have that kind of support.
I just can't give her enough credit, and that's priceless, because there's so many times that parents shoot down their child's dreams.
Right.
And at the end, they end up living a life full of regrets. And their child is 60, 70 years old, and they're having a conversation with a fellow youngster, and they go, "Oh man, I remember when I was your age, I wanted to do that, but I never did." And then you could see their energy drain, and they're like, I did whatever, and it was just okay. So it turns out my mom told me that she wanted to, when she was growing up, when she was little, she either wanted to be a photographer, a veterinarian, or a magician.
Oh, how funny.
And so she said, "You, Sean, became the magician, and I became the photographer." She was a professional photographer. So I don't remember where I was going with that, but yeah.
Well, that's great. Yeah, that she actually that you succeeded in her dreams. Then also seeing why that she was supportive then at that time as well.
And still is.
And still is supportive. That's great.
Absolutely.
Can't have anything better than your mom in your corner, you know, to help encourage you. Well, listen, it's been just fabulous. I just was noticing the clock over here, and we're about to come up on an hour, and I wanted just to close out by asking you what your magic word is. What is your phrase, or what's your philosophy of life?
My philosophy of life?
Yeah.
In one word, or just
a phrase? I mean, it could be a sentence, it could be a whole paragraph. I mean, kind of general. What words do you live by when you wake up in the morning that kind of get you going?
Hmm. Wow, Scott, now all of a sudden you're cutting deep, and it's like we're real casual now, like, forcing me to put on my philosopher's cap here.
Yeah.
Words that I live by, so every day I probably tell myself, remember your priorities in life. What's your priorities, and how can you cater to those priorities? So in my case, my number one priority is my health, mm-hmm. because without my health, I couldn't do these interviews and TV shows and perform at my best. So health is number one. And then my second priority is, am I doing what I love? And a lot of people don't even ask themselves that question. They just do something to make money. And I'm not against making money, and I'm not against people doing whatever to make money. But I really believe that we only live once. It sounds cliche. We all know that. We only get one shot here on this earth, at least in this body, the body that I'm in now, and I want to make it count. So I'm very grateful to have started really with hardly anything. I was not force-fed tons of money to get my career up and running like some people may think or whatever. I made all the money that I made in my business that was created between my mom and I made myself by working my butt off. So I'm very grateful to have learned all that, and I'm thankful that I'm doing what I love. So my health, and I'm doing what I love, and I'm making the world a better place, and treating others with compassion and respect. That's how I live.
A lot of stuff in there. Yeah, that's really great. Thank you very much. I had always thought whenever I was young and younger than you even of thinking, I don't want to look back in my life at some point, like let's say where I am today even, to say, what if I would have done that? And I should have gone and done this path, or at least tried it. Not that there was a fork in the road that I should have taken. I think I've taken the right way, the right path, but I may have trod down this one path and then backed up. At least I tried a little bit of it. You know, whatever it's going to be, I just think, you know, give back when you can to the world, because it's given me so much. I need to give them back something, which is in part of what this whole podcast is about. I want to try to give back to magic and to magicians a lot of what I have learned through the wisdom of people like you and others who share their thoughts on this program over the last 600 plus episodes. And on into the future then too. So I want to leave this a little bit better than when we left it. And so that way people can also appreciate the legacy and the rich history we have, which is the beautiful fabric that is our magic tapestry, basically. You know,
the magic word is the Scott Wells legacy. I mean, that's going to be your mark.
Well,
for sure. part of your contributions to our
Thank you very much. And thank you, Sean, very much for being my guest on today. So
thank you, Scott.
This has been marvelous. Thanks for your time. And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Sean Jay. This is Scotty L. Well, there you go. Another great conversation. Not an interview. Well, maybe it was kind of an interview. Anyhow, good conversation with another conjurer, Mr. Sean Jay. Thank you, Sean, very much for being my guest again this week here on the Magic Word Podcast. Always great chatting with you. I look forward to reading more about you and seeing what you do in this magical world, because I know there are so many different directions we can go, and looking forward to the next generation, seeing what you guys are going to be doing with it. So this has been great. Well, listen, we have always from week to week some really great guests who are coming up, and I've got some already in the can, so to speak, that I have already pre-recorded and ready to go in future weeks. And so I am really excited about this one I brought you this week and others that are coming up in the future. If you subscribe to our pod letter, that way you will be updated every time we have a new podcast when it drops, and also giving you an alert of who is going to be coming up the following week. So be sure to go to the Magic Word podcast.com, and there you can subscribe to the pod letter so you get the weekly update. And we are well over 1,000 subscribers right now to that pod letter, and it just comes in each week, so it's not obtrusive and it gives you some really good information. And when we have contests, you are the first ones to know about the contest as well, and it gives you some other good links, like to other videos and things we are doing, which is another thing we are also supplementing, or augmenting, if you will, if I can be redundant there, this audio podcast with a video podcast, which is put onto YouTube. So if you go to youtube.com/Texas Magician, I have posted many of these past weeks or months of videos, podcasts, and that are available for you to watch. So you can go to YouTube and watch them there, and please help us by subscribing. So while you are watching the video, just pause it for a moment and just hit that subscribe button down below there. And that will help us grow, and eventually so we can monetize the video podcast that we're doing. We're just a little bit short of the minimum we need in order to monetize that. There are other companies apparently who are putting their commercials on my videos, and so they're making money, but I'm not. So I just need your help, and if you subscribe, then maybe I can finally monetize that and get a buck or two. So if you can't join us as a friend of the Magic Word, perhaps it would be easy if by just hitting subscribe. Every person helps as we kind of come in close to that magic mark that we need for pushing us over the top. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to keep your priorities straight and treat others with compassion and respect. This is Scotty out.